Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block, it's only a serve, it's only a tackle, a run, it's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Welcome back to another edition of the Cleveland Baseball Talk Podcast. I'm Joe Noga, joined by Paul Hoynes. Hoynesy, another good night for the Guardians and for Shane Bieber. That's two. Two straight starts where he goes at least six innings, punches out a bunch of guys, doesn't give up any runs. Shane Bieber looking every bit of the ace Shane Bieber that we're used to seeing.
Yeah, Joe, a really impressive so far in two starts, 12 innings, 12 scoreless innings, 20 strikeouts, one walk, and 10 hits. He has been dominant, and what I like, Joe, is when Cleveland gave him the lead, I mean, he took over. He just kind of, you know, slammed the door on the Mariners. They had no chance.
Yeah, and the way that game started, the way things were looking through the first couple of innings of that game, that had the makings of a real pitcher's duel. It was Luis Castillo really looking, you know, strong against the Guardians once again. And then that fourth inning rolled around, and everything just sort of, the wheels fell off the cart for Castillo.
Yeah, they caught him. You know, he had held them to one run over 18 innings in the last three times he faced Cleveland, but they caught him in the fourth inning, and it was a little element of power and speed. Jose Ramirez starts the inning, reaches on an infield hit. The next two guys are retired. Then, Will Brennan gets some revenge against the Mariners after seeing Julio Rodriguez steal two hits from him on Monday night. You know, he works a six-pitch at bat, single to right field, and there's an error in right field. Jose comes around to score from first, and then Bo Naylor drops a hammer with a two-run homer.
Yeah, Jose Ramirez never stops running. He runs the bases. I think overlooked part of his game that we constantly try to mention to make sure that people realize how good he is at running the bases. He scores from first on that play. Just what's it mean? You mentioned that at bat for Will Brennan. What's it mean for Brennan to come out there and after a tough night where, you know, he's hitting the ball hard, he's putting the ball in play and doing the things that they want him to do, not seeing the results there, but for him to come up with the big hit in that inning that leads to the three-run inning, what's that mean for Will Brennan?
Yeah, I think you're starting to see a guy mature, Joe. You know, I was talking to him after the game. He said, every game's different. And you just, you just got to show up the next day and take your hacks. And, I think he didn't get frustrated. I'm sure he was frustrated Monday. He's hit some line drives, in the Oakland series that were caught as well. But, he hung in there, and Bo Naylor gave him a great compliment after the game. He said, without Will Brennan's hit, that inning never happens, and they never get that, you know, 3-0 lead. So, you know, he came through with, an 0-2 single to right against a tough pitcher, and that brought Naylor to the plate, and he delivered, and all of a sudden they've got a 3-0 lead.
Yeah, it just really looked like they started stringing hits together against Castillo, and like they had figured something out maybe against him. His changeup is so tough, and he's always so tough on Cleveland. But for Brennan to battle through and get that base hit, and then the unforced error by Haener, you don't really often see that an outfielder just sort of overrun the ball like that. And once it got past him, Jose was off to the races.
Yeah, I think that's an element of Cleveland's offense that they've stressed all spring is speed. I think Haniger knew Ramirez was running. Brennan had fouled off three straight pitches. Jose was running, trying to steal second on all three of those pitches. So he knew he was going when finally Brennan made contact. He knew he was going. I think he tried to hurry up to keep Ramirez from maybe going to third base. And and the result was Jose scored all the way from first.
Yeah, it's a little different, watching from home and watching on the TV broadcast. When they have to switch the camera angles, and you knew that Jose had been running, you knew he had been tired from those 90-foot sprints each time there was a foul ball. But when the base hit happens to right field, I'm thinking to myself, okay, well, Jose's on third, and then as soon as that ball hits Haniger's glove, I'm like, oh, Jose's scoring. That's not even a question, and that's exactly what happened, like you said. And then for that to lead into Bo Naylor getting up there. And finishing off the inning with a 2-run home run, that's what the Guardians need right there. That's what you've been waiting for, and that's what they needed all of last season. And Bo Naylor now delivers that. What's he in his last over his last two games? Just keeping him in the lineup and keeping his bat in the lineup has been important for these guys.
Yeah, he is. He came into this series 0 for 7, but he's in the last two games, he's 4 for 7 with the home run, the two RBIs. He's given some life to that bottom of that lineup. And after the game, Stephen Vogt said, they may look at this lineup again, to try to keep Bo in the lineup, whether he's catching or DH. And last night he DH'd with the Hedges catching, so maybe we'll see those a lineup where either Hedges and Bo Naylor, or it's Fry and Bo Naylor in the lineup at the same time, because they certainly could use some pop.
Yeah, that lengthening that lineup and extending those the 7, 8, 9 hitters last night, obviously Naylor with two hits, Brian Rocchio with two hits last night as well, when Hedgie's in there, Hedgie's not in there to hit. Hedgie's in there to do other things, but just put together some good at bats, and that what do you get? Rocchio had a double last night as well, so nice to see that. And I don't think with all the offense and that's great, but Shane Bieber put them in that position with those six strong innings, 9 strikeouts again. He started kind of started a little slow, and then picked it up, with the strikeouts. What's different about Shane Bieber right now, and as opposed to the beginning of the last couple of seasons, with just with him, not only physically, but just I think confidence-wise.
Yeah, I think of obviously there's confidence. Obviously he's healthy, Joe, and I think the fastball is has really set up his other pitches. That's what Austin Hedges was saying after the game. It makes all his pitches better. They have to respect that, the fastball, the increase in velo, and now all of a sudden you get the slider, you get the knuckle curve, you get the changeup. In one inning there. In his fifth inning, he gives up a leadoff double to Ty France, and then strikes out Canzone on a knuckle curve, Rojas on a fastball, and Crawford on a slider. So he's using all of his pitches, and he's been really, really effective with them.
Yeah, we've seen him now, twice on this road trip. What are the chances that he lines up to get the home opener as well now when they get back to Cleveland?
Yeah, I think that's a real good chance. He was asked about that last night, and he said, I've never pitched a home opener, and kind of with a wry smile, so I guess they probably talked about that.
Yeah, probably. He did pitch a home opener once, but it was in front of cardboard fans in 2020.
That's right. I forgot about that. Yeah, in 2020.
Anyway, that was actually a pretty good home opener that he pitched. What did he have, 14 strikeouts in that game or something?
Yeah, maybe 14 to what, a 2-0 win against Kansas City in 2020.
Yeah, maybe they need the cardboard fans for him to do well in a home opener. That'd be great. You know, and seeing that on Eclipse Day would only make that even more special. So we'll see how that lines up. The guys that followed him, though, did the job, where they were effective. Eli Morgan, 2 runs on 2 hits with a walk. There's something I think just a little off right now with Eli, and if they're going to keep running him out there, he's going to need to tighten things up.
Yeah, he struggled last night. He gives up a leadoff single, then a walk. He gets the guy out. Then they're shifted against Rojas, and Rojas rolls a little double past third base, scores a run, and then you know, the other then another run, then he's out of the game. Barlow comes in and gives up an RBI ground out, so that's how they got their 2 runs, but they were both charged to Eli. And he I don't know if it was any after effects from the Oakland game where he walked in the winning run, but he did not look exactly sharp.
No, and that's been a trend that you know we picked up on in spring training as well. Barlow came in. He looked good. Tyler Beattie came in, pitched an inning, had a walk, but one strikeout, and looked pretty strong. And then Emmanuel Clase closed it out in the ninth. Did allow a base hit, but struck out two. Another strong outing for his second save.
Yeah, with Class A, it's never easy, Joe. I mean, you're sitting there trying to, you know, write the final paragraph of the story, and you know, he strikes out the first guy, then he gives up a single. Kwan makes a rare error, and the guy goes to second base, and you're wondering, maybe we're still scarred from last year with the 12 blown saves, but thankfully he gets the next two guys. And he gets the second save of the season. And, you know, like you said, he looked good doing it.
Yeah, we were shell-shocked way too many times last year with that. 12 strikeouts for the Guardians pitchers in total. And, you know, the offense comes up with, 12 hits. Again, this is it's way too early, obviously. But you start looking at some of the leaderboards and you see that Cleveland is – offensively among the league leaders in, you know, lowest ground ball rate. And you see that they're, among the league leaders in OPS, in batting average, just in the American League. They're like third or fourth in slugging percentage. This offense is, you know, doing the opposite of what they did all last season.
Yeah. I mean, they are really, they're taking, they're not only making contact, Joe, but they're driving the ball. You know, I think they're close to leading the American League in extra base hits. You know, they might not be hitting a lot of home runs, but they're hitting doubles and triples, and their speed is really coming into play in the game. We talked about the speed element in the fourth inning. Then again, it surfaces in the fifth inning. You know, Rocchio hits a double, leadoff double. Kwan hits a sacrifice bunt to third. Rojas, the third baseman, rushes his throw to get Kwan. He throws, makes an error, and Rocchio scores. And Kwan didn't score, but you know, he was given a hit, and Rojas was, you know, charged with an error. But that was another element of speed, and I think that's influenced their offensive game as well.
With the growth in this offense, does it, you know, sort of line up with some of these young players growing into becoming veterans now? You know, we've been talking for 2 years about the young lineup, and you know, guys like Kwan, guys like Brennan and Bo Naylor, and obviously Andrés Giménez is looking a lot more like the Andrés Giménez of 2022. Does just that time and that growth, you know, come into play when you're talking about hitting for more power and impacting the baseball a lot more than they were last year?
Well, that's what they're counting on, Joe. We'll have to see. It's 6 games, but I know that's why they didn't make any moves over the winter. They wanted to see what their players on the roster could do. They didn't want to bring in any stopgap veterans to get in their way and stop their development. And so far, I would think they'd have to be pleased. A guy like Tyler Freeman really jumps out to me. You know, he hits the home run 2 nights ago. Then, you know, in the seventh inning last night, with the runners on first on the corners, he comes up with a sacrifice fly. So you know that maybe that wouldn't have happened last year, 2 years ago. Maybe he would have tried to maybe do too much at the plate, but you know he did just what they had to do. They needed a run. He gets a sacrifice fly. So I think that's probably a sign of maturity too.
Yeah, big time. All right, I want to remind our listeners if you want to follow along with our Guardians subtext and get updates from Seattle, from Minnesota when Hoynsey gets there. It's $3.99 a month to subscribe. Text messages sent directly to your phone. No messing around with social media or anything like that. Just a way for you to text back to us and share your thoughts and your questions about the Guardians. Cleveland.com/subtext or send a text message to 216-208-4346 to sign up. Hoynsey, there were some moves, not any roster moves, but yesterday there was some news on the injury front in terms of Gavin Williams and some other pitchers there that are expected to start at least start making the steps towards getting back on the mound in a major league situation.
Yeah, Gavin Williams had a bullpen session Monday. It went well. And Stephen Vogt said they're sending him back to Goodyear, where he'll begin his throwing program again. And I think it's going to be a while before we see Gavin. You feel bad for him. He had such a great start to the spring. His first two Cactus League starts, he had 9 strikeouts in 4 2/3 innings. And now basically he's got to start over. He's got to go through spring training again. So, we won't see him for a while. And B, that gives Carlos Carrasco more time to hang on to that open spot in the rotation. And also Xavion Curry and Ben Lively, who opened the year on the IL with because of that viral infection, they are starting games Wednesday and Thursday, respectively, for AAA Columbus. So their rehab assignments have begun, and the same with Angel Martinez. He's supposed to start his rehab assignment with the Clippers as well.
Yeah, that it's interesting that they're going to pitch back to back, Curry and Lively. I would assume that they're a lot closer and a lot more ready to a decision's got to be made a lot sooner on both of them. As opposed to, like you said, Williams, it's going to take a while if he's starting over, going back to basically spring training 2.0 for him. So there will be roster moves that need to be made. Did they give any update on Sam Hinches?
Yes, Sam he's been playing catch. He's expected to throw a bullpen when the team gets to Minneapolis. He'll be come home for the home opener, I guess, and then they'll make a decision where if he has to go out in a rehab, he has to go back to Goodyear. I get the feeling he'd probably have to go back to Goodyear, but they know him being a reliever, it's not going to take as long as it would for Gavin Williams to get ramped up again.
As far as who's the most vulnerable right now in that bullpen or in whatever situation, if when Sam Hinches does come back, if he's that close, who do you think right now might be somebody? And again, it's hard to predict because between now and then, there might be an injury, there might be somebody slips on a banana peel, who knows? But if they had to make that decision on Sam Hinches for a spot for him right now, who do you think would be most vulnerable?
I don't know, Joe. I mean, it depends who has options, mm-hmm. and Tim Herron has options. I mean, that's why you have young guys in the bullpen, so you can ride them up and down. Herron was, bounced between AAA and Cleveland 5 times last year. You don't like to have that designation, but that might be the guy. If it just depends, I think they're confident that Eli Morgan is going to bounce back, but we'll see.
Yeah, that's interesting. Also, looks like we've got some breaking news coming in here at the tail end of our recording of this podcast. It looks like the Guardians and Progressive Field have extended their naming rights agreement with Progressive Insurance, and that the ballpark will carry the name of Progressive, you know, into the future here. Hoynsey, I put you on the spot, I guess, as they it's been since what, 2008, so for 16 years it's been the ballpark, but the ballpark's name has been Progressive Field. This will extend things through the 2036 season. As the ballpark will remain Progressive Field, kind of an interesting update from the team on the naming rights.
Well, I think the deadline was coming up, Joe. This might have been the final year of the you know, the original deal with Progressive, so that kind of makes sense that they extended the naming rights, and hopefully they got a good deal. Maybe they got enough for to buy a free agent or something.
Well, I know we've been driving past the ballpark in the last week. We've seen some new additions in you know, going on with the upgrades and the updates. They've got new blue LED lights around the upper bowl on the outside of the park that look kind of fancy and new. And they're also putting new signage on the outside. Above the naming, or sort of the marquee on the corner of Carnegie and Ontario, that the new lettering that says Progressive Field up there. So that's interesting. I'm gonna dig into this in terms of the news release that just came out, and have a post about it here in a minute. But all very interesting. It's going to be Progressive Field for the near future moving forward. So. At least through 2036, when we go to the ballpark, it will be Progressive Field. Hoynes, that's going to wrap up today's edition of the Cleveland Baseball Talk podcast. We'll check back in with you tomorrow, an off day, as we get ready to open up the final series of this. I'm sorry, not tomorrow's not an off day. Friday's the off day. Tomorrow, as we open up the series against Minnesota, the final leg of this opening road trip. And we'll talk to you then.
Good deal, Joe.